Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I'm joined by Vincent Moat. Vincent is the Managing Director of the Karnak Group, a Salesforce partner with a head office in Sydney, a team in Brisbane, and further plans for expansion. Through the episode, we discussed Vincent's career before Salesforce, how he ended up in the Salesforce world, and then what led him to wanting to start a Salesforce partner company and the challenges he faced along the way. We discussed the business that he now runs, why they have industry vertical specializations, and the value that they can add to those businesses in those industries due to the deep domain expertise they have. We look at how Vincent has grown the business and team through hiring people from a non-Salesforce background and giving them an opportunity to learn and develop their skills in the Salesforce ecosystem. We also focus on some of the skills that are now really important due to COVID-19 and how Vincent has had to look at certain skills that will be able to address the challenges that we're facing in the day-to-day working life. We discuss some of the frustrations that Vincent has had with the ecosystem, and we look at the plans for the business moving forward and the future growth they are expecting and planning for. So a really interesting episode to hear more about Vincent, his team, and the challenges they're solving for some of their clients in different industries, and also the challenges that a business faces growing and building a Salesforce partner. I hope you enjoy the episode, and if you do, please do subscribe for future episodes that are coming through.
So Vincent, thank you very much for joining me. You did just mention you're on a building site, so I'll just flag that now in case any of our listeners wonder why there's drills going off in the background at any point. But thank you very much for being a guest.
Thank you for having me.
No, my pleasure, my pleasure. So I said before, one of the reasons and where the idea of having you on the podcast came from is because I enjoy the back and forth we have on LinkedIn. I think you have some interesting views on certain topics that we've raised before. So we'll get into some of that. And we'll talk about your journey through Salesforce. But what I really want to understand first and foremost is, what was your career before Salesforce, before we know more about the journey that you've been on since?
Yeah, so as a starting point, I'm an engineer as a trade. So I studied telecommunication engineering and production engineering. So I wasn't really going into the IT world by default. When I arrived in Australia 16 years ago, I started in the SAP world. So as a traditional, you know, SAP consultant, rolling out finance systems in businesses and going through manufacturing and construction and all these sort of things. So I've started my career in really the traditional SAP world, which was actually really good for me because I've learned heaps around end-to-end processes in a business, not just, you know, the starting point or the end of a process, but really what does it take to do end-to-end in a business. So I did that for three or four years before actually moving to one of my clients who was BlueScope at the time. So I moved to BlueScope Steel to continue a little bit this journey of rolling out ERPs in businesses that we were buying at the time. So it was very much in a M&A capacity, basically. And I continued that for a while. And then I moved into the traditional IT world and I had a team that was responsible for ERPs at the time. So we had 1,500 users on very old green screen terminal ERPs that they still have actually at the moment. And back in 2010, this is where we started to look at Salesforce automation or, you know, more like what should we do in the CRM space? And that was my first interaction at that time with Salesforce. My journey was really much big ERPs, complex projects in large businesses, basically.
Sure. So I guess when you first came across Salesforce, it was a breath of fresh air.
It was. And that was, you know, you have to keep in mind, I was dealing with the ERPs that were pretty much green screen. So I was going to a system where adding a field was taking 3 seconds, basically. So just for us, it was like, wow, that's absolutely amazing. So it was interesting because the first interaction with Salesforce was really just a little pilot. We were just doing a bit of innovation, understanding what we should do in that space. And that was it. We were not really serious about it at the time.
Sure. So obviously people talk about the power of Salesforce and the ability to customize and make really quick changes. But you come from that background where that wasn't the reality with the ERPs. And I actually used to be an SAP recruiter, so I know that market reasonably well. To make a small change in SAP back in the day, how long was that taking you?
Oh, look, yeah, when I was back in that space, you know, if you wanted to do, I guess, not just adding a field, but maybe something of significance, I guess, it was always like a 2 to 3 months project. Not necessarily a project, but at least a delay, because it had to go through prioritization, it had to go through change management board and impact assessment and all these sort of things. So, yeah, that was my world basically before, like very strict governance, you know, everything was long. You had to predict what you wanted 6 months in advance, basically.
Sure. So when I used to recruit in that market, it was really interesting because like it was a great place to be as a recruiter because projects were so long. So you could place someone on a project for 5 years. And then at the end of the project, they'd realize we've not achieved any business value from this 5 years worth of hundreds of millions of dollars we spent. We're going to have to do it all again. So contractors would just stay forever. What was the, when BlueScope or the business you were working for back then, when they saw this new platform that could be, you know, edited really quickly, modified, value could be added really quickly, was it an immediate, was everyone on board with it? Or was it, oh, this is, we're in the cloud and this is all a bit fancy for us?
No, so look, first of all, it started with just a proof of concept, I guess, with a realization, I guess, 10 years ago where businesses, especially large businesses, knew that they had to do something around CRM, but it was very hard to know what is it exactly that we need to do, what do we actually need, and what is the real value of doing it? Because quite frankly, 10 years ago, there were not millions of good use cases of CRM. We were more talking about disasters than anything else and lack of adoption and all these sort of things. So the approach, I guess, that we used was a little bit different at the time where we said, you know what, we're going to start with just a proof of concept and we're going to use the flexibility of the platform to almost build as we go because we don't know what we don't know. So the only way we're going to know is by trying and by having user groups that can test a few functions and we're going to do it in a small scale before going wider. And that was the approach. And I was right during the GFC as well. So at that stage, it was trying to get the proof of concept up and running while not spending any money, essentially.
Sure, sure. Yeah, challenging times for sure. So your journey obviously has evolved since then and has now kind of focused on the Salesforce world. And we'll get to your business and how that started. But what was the journey in between first finding Salesforce and then starting a business? Like, what kind of roles were you playing through that time?
Yeah, so when I started with Salesforce, I probably worked with it for just, I don't know, a year or two or something like that, to the point where Salesforce was rolled out in that enterprise business and we had a few hundred users and, you know, getting adoption and starting the journey and all these sort of things. And after that, I completely changed direction. So I actually moved to continuous improvement in manufacturing. So I actually went and looked at plants and, you know, all our factories and understand, you know, how can we be more effective? And that was through programs like 5S and, you know, looking at machines and productivity of machines and all these sort of things. So completely different. And I was disconnected from the Salesforce world for quite a few years. I then moved into finance after that, where I looked after quite a large M&A project where we integrated a large business, basically. And that's a project that took 2 years. Salesforce was just one little component of that project, but there were, you know, site closure, site reopening, consolidation of teams and all these sort of things. Did that for 2 years. And then I moved into marketing after that, just to try to cover absolutely every department. Moved into marketing, where I was responsible essentially for anything that was innovation through technology and any technology that was customer focused. So this is where I started to reconnect again with the Salesforce ecosystem, but still as a customer, essentially. This is where we're starting to use Salesforce to connect with our customers, to try to use it as a bit of an innovation platform, to essentially try to sweat the asset a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And this is where I realized actually the platform came a long way, basically, in 5 years, and it's becoming really fun.
Yeah.
At that time that I thought, you know, I think I want to do something with that platform. I think there's something to do. I want to help people with that platform. So this is really where at that time that I realized actually I'm going to go and create a business out of that.
Sure. So how did that leap, how was that? Because a lot of people want to start businesses and you've been with a company for a number of years at that point. What was that leap like from being employed to going out on your own and being a business owner?
It's always a challenge, but I was really lucky that I had an employer that was absolutely brilliant and we actually talked through it. And we put a plan together for me to go part-time at the beginning and then move out of the business very slowly. For them, it was great, not losing knowledge. Mm-hmm. We could hand over all the information and everything that I had. And I could start building the business slowly. So work on the business plan, work on what it would look like to start with. So it was a really nice transition. It took 4 or 5 months, basically. And after that, that was it.
And off you are. Yeah, yeah. So what are the biggest, aside from, I guess, having the funds and things like that, which is always going to be a challenge when you're starting a business, is kind of bootstrapping it and getting it to the right point. But aside from all of that, what was the biggest challenge for you as starting a Salesforce and consulting business?
Yeah, so there were plenty of challenges. And I think every partner would tell you the same thing. It's not easy to start a partner. To be a Salesforce partner, it's not that easy, especially when you start, simply because the Salesforce ecosystem is complex. There's lots of interaction points. It's hard to understand the go-to-market approach, the who's who, essentially, you know, trying to meet with the right people who can actually help you and to make sure that you can also help them as well. Sure. So I guess the first few months when we started as a Salesforce partner, we probably spent 6 months that I would have called a write-off almost, where we didn't really have the right approach. We were trying to find our fit. And the second part is because we were specializing in industries that were not really known to Salesforce, it was hard to find the people who could be receptive to what we had to say or actually understood the value proposition. So it took a little bit of time. But then we met, actually, after a few months, we met the right people and it just went.
Sure. Yeah. So what? Because that was going to be my next question. You do specialize in verticals and we're seeing more of that now. Like we're seeing companies that do, you know, are heavy in government or financial services or even cloud specific specializations. But why did you choose the industries that you have? And not just why those industries, but why not be broad and offer something to everyone?
There's a few reasons. First is the background of a lot of the people that we've got in the business. So a lot of our people come from construction, property, or manufacturing. That's it. I guess construction is one of the sectors that is still a little bit misunderstood by Salesforce and by a lot of technology vendors overall. So because of our knowledge of construction and the fact that we've been working in that space for 10 years before, that was allowing us to actually have already a value proposition without even having Salesforce. We could actually talk to businesses in construction and talk to them about technology transformation, technology strategy, how to approach change management, how we've done it basically in the past. And that helps a lot. And for me, that is probably the most important thing of a Salesforce partner is to actually have this industry expertise. Because if you're just there to deliver a technology platform, I don't think that is enough. I think you need to be able to bring this best practice, those ideas, what you've seen in similar industries or competitors or all these sort of things. You need to bring value. So that's what we wanted to do. And when we created Karnak, that's one thing that we said that we would do first is business acumen first, technology second. And that's been our mojo since then, essentially, is if you go to a customer, you're there because you know things and you know a lot of things.
Sure.
Yeah, that was really the starting point to be technology centric and to be industry specific. And also because I've been on the other side as a client using Salesforce partners who were coming to us and saying, what do you want? And I hated it. I just didn't like it. You know, they were asking us, what's your requirements? And I said, well, tell me what we could do. Tell me more. And we didn't get that. So what I wanted to do is that Karnak could actually create that.
Sure. So would you work with a customer that wasn't implementing Salesforce? Or like if it didn't make business sense for them to use Salesforce, do you then deliver another technology platform?
It's not that simple, but we do have a technology strategy division. So we do have some customers who ask us to help them with the technology strategy. And that might be, can you help us with file management? Can you help us with, HR portals, employee management, these type of things? Sometimes Salesforce is the right answer. Sometimes it's something completely different.
Sure.
And that's okay. So we want to make sure that if a customer is using Salesforce, they're using it for the right reasons, but they understand how they can use it as well. So just not a sales play or just not a, you know, we want to expose them to all the cases, but we do have some customers who just come to us for technology strategy.
Yeah, that's interesting because I've had conversations with people in the past and a well-known CTA in Sydney told me that, you know, Salesforce is now being asked to do things that it shouldn't be asked to do. But your view is that if it isn't something that Salesforce should be doing, that's your responsibility as a consulting business to advise the end customer and guide them down a different path?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you just need to make sure that the experience of the customer with Salesforce is great and that they see that every dollar brings value. So if they spend a dollar on something that doesn't work really well and doesn't bring them value, I don't think that's the right outcome.
Sure. So the industries that you're working with, what are some of their biggest challenges that you are able to solve with the Salesforce platform? Like, what do you see typically as being a great use case in these industries?
Yeah, so I mean, in construction, if you go to a construction site, what you'll see is a site shed. In a site shed, what you'll see is piles of paper. So just going into a site shed, you would understand what is the challenge. And then all of a sudden, if they audited and someone asked them, can you please give me the site register of last week? Can you tell me who has been inducted on site? It becomes a nightmare. So the first challenge is that is how do you continue to digitize processes continuously? It doesn't need to be all done in one hit, but how do you do it continuously? And how does it become a bit of a way of doing things in a business? So essentially, you've got a process, make sure you've got the right platform to digitize that process. So for us, that's the main challenge that we see, is that those businesses deal with a lot of compliance requirements. They're more and more complex. Construction is a lot more complex today than it was 10 years ago and 20 years ago. And in 10 years, it will be even more complex with, you know, BIM models and all these sort of complex things. So we see that as a challenge, that those construction businesses don't have one platform and typically tend to resolve one problem by using one platform. So typically you go, I've got a problem with my safety audit. Let's find a solution that does safety audit. And all of a sudden, they've got 100 apps that don't talk to each other. It becomes very difficult to manage all that. So we think that's a massive challenge. And some of our customers have tackled it. It takes time and energy. But once it's done, that opens the door to ISO compliance, that opens the door to government projects and all this sort of thing. So having your house in order is critical for those businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And even more so right now with everything that's going on in the world in terms of tracking COVID cases and things like that. Have you seen companies effectively use the platform to solve the challenges that we're facing right now with regards to kind of tracking and tracing?
Yeah, so we've had lots of discussions with our customers during COVID to say, okay, what's changing exactly? And quite frankly, for them, not much, because they're already tracking people. They already know who's inducted because it isn't to do anymore. So they effectively already have a tracking system for that. So that hasn't made a massive difference, at least in New South Wales. In Victoria, it's a lot harder at the moment because we've got customers who can only go on site, you know, 3 times a week and that's it, or can only visit 3 sites every week and that's about all. And there's a limit of the number of people on site. That's a lot more complex to manage, but that's almost way beyond just the traceability, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a lot more complex than that. But we've had some customers where we've done a simple site check-in, check-out for them to make sure that at least they had an easier process to manage these sort of things and that they were more comfortable that the information was actually tracked as opposed to, you know, on the piece of paper, essentially.
Sure. So obviously you mentioned you've built a team and you've successfully managed to onboard some really good people in the team. What's been your approach for that and what are some of the frustrations that you've had or found while hiring in the Salesforce ecosystem?
Yeah, I guess the first thing that we've done is not hiring in the Salesforce ecosystem because we knew that there were too much competition. And when you come as a new partner, it's a little bit difficult to attract talent, right? Because you don't have the big projects yet. You don't have, you know, the history. You don't have all those things. You know, you start from scratch and you still need the best people to help you to grow. So our approach at the beginning has been to get people who are not from the Salesforce ecosystem, but people who had a really good brain and a growth mindset. So people who were capable to reskill quickly, able to learn the Salesforce platform really quickly, but either they already had a good business background or they already had great knowledge in platforms like Siebel CRM or, you know, it might be a NetSuite or all these sort of platforms, essentially. So we've done that for the first 18 months, and that's been absolutely brilliant for us. Yeah, we've recruited people who have been really, really hungry to learn.
Yeah, I always advise that, and I think if you have the right environment and the right team, then everyone should be bringing juniors through, whether they're small or large. I can give them back to the ecosystem and helping grow the ecosystem. But we do get a lot of pushback with that, because especially in the consulting world, right? Because you need people to be billable, to be profitable. So how did you manage that in terms of having someone come into the business that didn't necessarily know Salesforce? Like, what was the ramp-up period and how did you make that work in the early days?
By working a lot to start with. no question about that. So we do have some people that are really knowledgeable in Salesforce. So not everyone's coming green either. So it's just having the right mix to start with. For us, it's pretty much a one-to-one. So one person who knows Salesforce really well or is a all-rounded consultant to one junior person. So we do a one-to-one mix. We still have a one-to-one mix, essentially. Junior consultants can still be billable. There's no problem with that. It's just either at a different rate or you give them different tasks to start with. But it has never been an issue for us to look at the billable rate and say, oh, they're not billable. It's not even that important to start with. As long as the overall project works well and the overall project is profitable, then we're all good.
Sure. And do you find, and are you open to hiring people at a senior level that don't come from a Salesforce background as well? Like, do you see value in bringing people from other technologies at architecture level, as an example, and giving them the freedom to learn?
Yeah, so we have. So for example, in Brisbane, we've recruited people who are from just an industry background. So zero knowledge of Salesforce, apart from being part of a project once or something like that. But we brought them with industry background and great knowledge and straight away putting them to manage practice. And they bring different ideas, completely different ideas. So the preconceived ideas of this is how a practice should run are put in the bin, essentially, and we start with new ideas, and that works really well. So it just depends what you want to create as a team. You know, at the senior level, we don't necessarily expect people to be the best at Salesforce. We expect the people to be the best at people management, the best at creating ideas and being innovative and this sort of thing. So that worked really well for us in practice management, in marketing, and in sales.
Yeah, nice. Okay, cool. So I think that's definitely a lesson that a lot of people can really learn from in the ecosystem, because it's not sustainable just to keep hiring for experience and poaching from other companies and then they poach from someone else and it's just a vicious circle. So I really do think there's a lot of value in what you said. But looking at the Salesforce ecosystem, I want to kind of push some of your buttons here, because I know that we have had some kind of debate around, you know, the salaries that people look for with Salesforce skills, potentially hiding behind certifications and you know, I've got 10 certifications, therefore I'm worth X. What are the frustrations that you found when you were looking at you know, qualified or experienced Salesforce professionals?
So for me, the biggest challenge is not so much the salary. Yes, salaries are high and all these sort of things, but that's our job to make it work, to show the value to customers so we can still be profitable. I think what is really difficult in the ecosystem is that for the same price, you can get someone who's really, really good or someone who's really, really bad. And that's the difficult part of the current Salesforce ecosystem, because essentially there's so much competition that you need to recruit people and you spend, you know, 2 hours with them maximum. They may not have even met with your team and their future colleagues, and you need to make a decision based on that. So I think that's the frustration for me, is that people think, yes, a certification means that I can get more salary, when it's not the case. And even if you work on lots of projects, that doesn't mean you're actually good. So it's the difficult part is that, yes, there's not enough people, but the reality is there's not enough good people.
Yeah. Yeah, like I've said that recently, I wouldn't necessarily say that the market is candidate short any longer. I think there's lots of candidates, but like it's the top 10, 20% that everyone wants to hire that are really hard to find or hard to entice. Like finding people, actually, they're all over LinkedIn, right? You go on LinkedIn, you type in Salesforce developer, everyone is a Salesforce developer now. But actually establishing which ones are good and which ones are potentially learning, or which ones think they're more experienced than they are or present themselves in that way. How do you assess that? How do you make sure that you're like, what's your interview style and approach to make sure that you're weeding out the people that aren't right for your business?
Yeah, so I mean, for us, you have to keep in mind that we value more the business mindset before the technical knowledge. So for me, what matters first is what experience do they have in terms of projects, and not necessarily what they've done during those projects, but what have they learned about the industry? How did they approach the customer problems? How much did they actually try to understand that industry? For me, that's what matters first. So someone who doesn't have this curiosity, I guess, straight away they're out anyway. Even if they're the best Salesforce technical person, it doesn't matter. because if they're not interested in the customer in the industry, that's not going to work for our customers. So for me, that is the first gateway to some extent. The second one is obviously the Salesforce knowledge. And again, we believe that anyone can actually learn Salesforce. So if someone has a little bit of weak knowledge, but you know, lots of certifications, we're going to look at it. If someone's got two certifications, but we can see that they're in a real learning pattern, then we're going to look at that as well. We typically don't test people technically on when we recruit. We just track them at a complex project pretty quickly, and we know pretty quickly whether they're going to be able to do it. We find that's the best approach because, quite frankly, in 1 hour, you don't really test their knowledge.
Sure. And what's changed for your business through with all the remote working? And like, do you see your business going back to the way it was in terms of people being in an office, or how do you see things shaping up over the coming months?
Yeah, that's a good question. So obviously, we were like everyone, April, May, June, pretty much in lockdown. No one at the office. We've actually reopened the office now. And we ask people, you know, you do what you want, essentially. We'll see how it goes. And people pretty much come back 2 days a week on average. Some people are back 5 days because they want that interaction. They love bouncing ideas. And for them, that works better. And we've got some people who are just back 1 or 2 days a week. So we essentially, what's changed is not much, to be very frank with you, except that we're not actually going to customers. That is probably the biggest change for us. It's not so much working from home. It's actually not having this face-to-face interaction with customers that we actually miss.
And has that put a further emphasis on engagement skills and the ability to engage with a customer? For you when hiring, is that going to change anything that you're not, people aren't sat face-to-face with the customer? Or does it just continue to strengthen what you were already looking for?
Yeah, no, what's changing is that we need more people now who've got great communication skills, who are capable of being really efficient in meetings. Because when in the past we could do an 8-hour workshop, a full day workshop, now you need to do it in 2 hours essentially and break it down. So we need people who are a lot more focused for shorter period of times and people who have got great skills at communicating and being able to facilitate remotely. So it is a different skill set. Not everyone's got it. And we're also learning how to do that. So rather than doing design sessions that are, you know, 3 days in a row and everyone's tired at the end, now you need to do burst of 2 hours and that requires a lot more planning. So yes, it does change a little bit the skill set in a sense that we need people who are a lot more better at planning, faster at doing these sort of things, this sort of engagement and getting the information out of a customer and communicating what we need to communicate. But everyone's learning, so I don't think it's really changing the way we hire. We just have to work differently. So it's more impacting our methodology, essentially.
Yeah, okay, cool. And final question, what does the future look like for the business and what are you excited about for what's to come?
Oh, lots of things. First of all, I think what's exciting is that we're still growing to start with, and that's not the case for everyone, especially at the moment. So for us, the future is quite different to what it is now. Essentially, we became also an ISV partner. So during COVID, we had a few people on the bench and we spent the time to actually put together all the assets that we developed over the years and now putting that into apps. So we're opening essentially a product division for our business. So very exciting. And we're preparing to go global in 18 months as well. So with our construction expertise, with the assets that we're putting together around our construction accelerator, we're planning to attack Asia and the US in the next 18 months. So we've got big grand plans and we've got the energy to do it. And we're recruiting people who have the energy to do that as well. So our future is essentially growth. We will grow. We will continue to grow. We will consolidate our position in Australia and then overseas as well. Now.
Yeah, nice. I think we should plan a follow-up podcast for 18 months' time to see what that growth looks like and the lessons you've learned from going through the next 18 months, because I'm sure there's going to be plenty, but I'm sure you'll overcome them as well. So thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed the chat. If anyone wants to reach out, hit you up and ask some questions, where's the best place for that?
Oh, they can contact me on LinkedIn, I guess.
Yeah, that's the place you are.
Yeah, best place for me.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. Really enjoyed it and all the best for that growth.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.